So the passage begins with a bewildered young man helplessly enchained by demons that have invaded him. He's like, to quote that movie, a dead man walking, living in a graveyard. Just as you have young people coming to your church, the Reformed Church in Englewood some years ago had young people who were coming and grew up there. One of those young men is now president of the largest seminary in the world. You may know Richard Mao. I know him. When I was training in seminary, he was there too, and so we'd have supper together. And he would tell me about how that in college, he had his doubts and questions, and he found this great Christian counselor that he could go in and just sit down and spout off about what he was thinking, and the counselor would accept his words, and then they'd talk things through, and he was able to grow in his faith to the place where he said, yeah, I guess I can respond to God's wanting to call me into ministry. When he went to Fuller Seminary and became the president, he remembered his college bewilderment and his faith struggles, and so he encouraged two people there, two pastor scholars, to address how the church could help emerging young adults today. And their research is fascinating. It's in a book called Sticky Faith, and there's also a website by this title. And here's what they found. 50% of church-related kids do utilize their faith and their moral training in college choices and avoid some devastating consequences. Now, that's encouraging news to hear. And, you know, sometimes we just, you know, they're gone from the church and we figure, well, you know, hopefully they'll come back when they have their kids, when they get married and have their kids. And the church really hasn't done as much as what we could. And so I've been studying some of the things about what young adults are looking for. The extension now is not just from age like 18 to 22. Emerging young adulthood runs until age 35. And so here they are trying to figure out, who am I, all during those ages with job choices and difficulties and setbacks and same thing with dating, they tell me. Near us, however, are churches that are saying, hey, those young people want guidance, and we're going to give it to them. One church near Willowbrook Mall has grown in the past 10 years to now having 1,600 people a week attending in a factory. It was the Thomas English Muffins oven factory, and now it's emptied, and now they're using that as an alternate church. Another group that is meeting in a school in Hoboken has grown from 100 to 400 young people in the past, that was about in the past 5 years. And both of their websites are fascinating as well. So that reminds us that, hey, there's something we can do, and it's so critical, of course. This is a time when they're forming their lifetime friendships. They're thinking about marriage and choosing a partner. They're thinking about a career and choosing how their philosophy of life and whether that will have service or whether they will see ways they can be of leaders. All these things are going on, these very critical things for their future that could have devastating consequences if they just gave up on themselves, as the neighbors and the family of this deranged man had done. Now, that's the good news. The other part of the news from this research is that 40 to 50% of church youth group kids drop totally their faith in college. However, after a while, 80% of that number say, we didn't intend to live this way. And they wish the church had better prepared them for the campus choices they were going to face. Now, our Bible passage describes a cemetery where a man faced debilitating consequences from demoralizing forces. And you can imagine some of the temptations and so on that you've heard about facing college students today. In our time, every hospital near a college on Thursday night stocks extra supplies of rape kits, IV fluids for those dehydrated from alcohol-induced vomiting, blood for drunk driving accidents. It's big business. College students spend $5.5 billion each year on alcohol. And it's not just those areas that we hear about, you know, but more about. It's also bad personal time management choices that debilitate parents. Say, at least a parent was telling me last Monday, that they debilitate up to one-fourth of collegians, many of them wasting time at entertainment while they're at college, including probably some of that TV reality show things that this mom was moving the kids away from and trying to move them into. Three good TV programs a week was her restriction for them. And so they're missing out on gaining an education for a fulfilling life in the real world because they're just off straying with all this new freedom, uncertain about what they can do. So what can parents and the church and others do about such debilitation? Well, Sticky Faith went into some research to find out how we could do preventative education, how youth leaders and parents could do that kind of thing. But in this book is an interesting thing that I didn't think I'd be finding as much emphasis on in the book. And what they're saying is, look, those young kids are going to make mistakes. And it's going to be important that they be able to realize that God is there. Even when they feel like, man, I've really just separated from him, and this is certainly not what I wanted to do. Can they feel that God's grace is there? And can they step beyond any guilt or dismay about themselves and say, but God's renewing love is here. And I can turn. I can change. I have the ability to make better choices. And I can live with myself and do it. And the research found that when those kids could do it, they avoided many, many devastating things that they just probably would have continued to stray into or find in their life as emerging young adults. Now, as I'm reading this book, I'm thinking, hey, wait a minute, this is not just for college students, it's for us too. This theme of God's grace that's in all these churches today, this theme about, hey, when you make a mistake, God is still there. And God's renewing love is there, his forgiveness. And he wants to be able to bring about a vision within you of the change that's possible. Sticky Faith says, parents could offer something very great to their children by being able to share with them the fact that when they're facing mistakes, God's grace helps them to better accept themselves as human beings and be able to move on. Well, let's go on. Next part of that passage. Here's this deranged young man who says, don't change me, it's too painful. Just go away. But Jesus knows that the outcome will be worth much more than the perceived pain. And he even knows how to make it less painful. And so, he does transform the situation for the better. Now, I was talking about parents and looking forward to the summer, but grandparents and aunts and uncles that are here, you know, you're going to have some chances, too, during the summer to be able to talk with those young people. And so you're probably thinking, too, hey, how can I be able to offer some kind of vision of new developmental possibilities for these young people at their stage in their life? And don't just think about, grammar school kids, but realize that here's emerging young adults still growing into their identity all the way to age 35, still struggling with challenges about who am I? What can I possibly be among the many who am I's that I see myself being? Where might God be leading me to be able to put my focus a little more? The affirmation of them, of course, makes a tremendous difference. There are tools available to be able to help us as parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles to be able to help in the various ages and stages of the development of children and young people. And during the refreshment time, I want to show you some of those tools that parents are telling me are powerful helps. Here's just a few I'm going to have out on that table near where the refreshments are. Teaching your children values. Parents tell me, wow, it's got ideas, it's got activities, it's got stories for all different ages and stages on 12 different values. Fascinating book. I'm going to go buy one, the parents say. Man, some years ago wrote the Living Bible. Maybe you remember Ken Taylor, who wrote the Living Bibles. That was one of the translations, one of the early translations. Well, would you believe he had 10 children? He had 10 children, and so, of course, he was working with his kids. So he came out with some great books about being able to make character choices using the Sermon on the Mount and the Ten Commandments and other parts of the Bible. And so those are fascinating books for younger kids. Here's one called Family Traditions. It's part of a Heritage Builder series of 5 different books that say, hey, how can we celebrate the times in our children's lives? And how can we prepare to be able to make the most of these various significant teaching moments that will be coming along at various ages and stages? Here's one about boys by Michael Gurion. And he's not only dealing from actually pre-birth, telling you about how boys are formed different than girls, but he's also describing that after children have gone through this age where we can pour all this information into them, you know, around age 6, maybe through 11, 12, something like that, when they get into the stage, into the teenage stage of saying, hey, wait a minute, now I want to take more control of things, so quit giving me so much advice, you just let me make some of these choices, that he's able to come up with a whole series of questions that parents can ask as coaches to young people. Fascinating study. Then here's Chuck Clark. He's actually one of the two people who was doing this research for Fuller Seminary. And Chap did earlier research on high school students. And so he wrote this book called Hurt. Now, it figures hurt has 2 connotations here. One is, you know how teenagers sometimes going through those stages will say, look, I want to make that decision. I just want to do this. I really want to do this. Come on, let me just try this. I mean, I'm getting to an age where I have to make choices. And sometimes parents can be hurt as children will say something like, bug off or let me alone. I don't want to talk about that. And so many parents, not all, but many parents will recede, just say, okay, well, maybe I got to let them alone. This is too complex. I can't deal with this. I'll just let them alone, which is absolutely the wrong thing to do because teenagers are hurting when their parents step aside from being a coach and a friend and a mentor to them in this very critical time of high school age. Fascinating book with some ideas about how to deal with that. Well, let me talk for a moment about something other than children and that kind of relationship. Let's talk about to business people here today. You know, you too know that you have to make space for renewing grace because it motivates workers and it motivates customers. And you're also looking to the future to be able to deter painful and devastating circumstances that otherwise would happen if you didn't do good planning. So you sort of are reflecting on your job, God's intervention to be able to halt the degradation that could happen in the future if good planning was not done. And you're reflecting God in the sense that you're bringing about times of grace to flex with people's human condition and to keep them motivated. Contractors put a contingency into their estimates for the unplanned parts of and the uncertainties that may come along in building. Avis Rent-A-Car some years ago had a manager who was watching what was happening in the boardrooms, and he discovered that after the board had approved a decision, talked it over and approved a decision, that still only one-third of their decisions worked out well. Another third were useless, and the third needed a lot of adjustment to be able to make it as a successful decision in business. Wow, what an insight to say, hey, I have to make room for the fact that not everything is going to go as planned, and I better be ready to adjust and help people adjust rather than just pointing fingers at one another. A conflict management study reports that 80% of avoiding bad conflict is deliberate, planned prevention. So we are called by God, wherever we are, to be able to make that renewing grace happen, to be able to be those people who can get in there and stop debilitation from happening and turn things around. And with God's help, we can do some marvelous things, as you know. A father grieved that his middle school son was getting into a troublesome pattern. And so he said, "Son, I believe God cherishes the precious soul in you and wants it to develop. But this pattern of deeds is hurtful to you, and it's hurtful to us. I'm going to put a nail in the door frame whenever a hurtful deed happens. But," he said, gracefully going on, "when you do something that is redeeming or Christ-like, I'm going to remove a nail." At first, the doorpost began to get filled with more and more nails, once in a while one coming out, but then the nail going back in that hole again, and new nails getting in. But gradually, those thoughts about how to be a redeeming presence of Christ began to fill that young man's soul. And the nails began to come out faster than they were going in. And one day, all the nails were gone. And the father took the son over to that frame and said, "Son, what a happy day this is. Look, all the nails are gone. Are you happy?" And the son said, "No, for the holes are still there." Today's message of grace says that Christ's holes in his hands and in his legs were made so that we could be free from remorse of those holes of the past and be able to move on and not miss seeing the possibilities and the potential and the opportunities that God wants us to see for fulfilling development. One more thought. This is the last part of that chapter. This young man, now healed and given awesome new life potential, begs to be able to leave town with Jesus. And Jesus says, "No, don't tag along with me. You have more potential for good. you go back into your hometown and tell people there about God's renewing gift to you. I need to tell you another piece of research. Who do you think helped best to be able to help those young people discover that God's redeeming grace was with them and that they could change and step away from some of the mistakes that were happening while they were in college? Parents, of course. Parents made a difference. Those parents who talked about their own mistakes and about God's grace in their life. Second in line, the adults from their church. Not the youth group. Not the youth leaders. The adults from their church. Those adults who had told them something about their life journey, about the challenges they had faced, and how their faith had helped them to be able to make it through those challenges, were admired by these college students. And they knew that these adults were counting on them to be able to be the future leaders in the kingdom of Christ. And they remembered that. And it made a significant difference, says this research. So, if we get together, our stories, no matter what color hair our hair happens to be, if we get together these stories about how God's grace has worked for us and helped us to avoid some devastating things and helped us to overcome some mistakes and helped us to see a fulfilling future, when we can tell those stories, it's tremendously effective. So, I thought, to my wife, hey, Irene, let's us try it. So, I took a paper that I'd found that has 9 different possibilities of being able to help you with figuring out your stories. And Irene was driving the car. We were traveling. And so, I had a captive audience. And so, I began to quiz her down these 9 different possibilities of telling stories. It was amazing how many different instances each of us came up with. Stories about how this has happened. I'll have this paper for you later on if you'd like it. So, here we are with a fascinating Bible passage. And Christ's disciples, while they're on vacation, are watching Jesus' generosity. And they're preparing to be able to live that grace-giving life that they see in Jesus and help people step beyond guilt and accept God's grace, helping them to entrust their challenges to God's insights, which lead to a more fulfilling life. And those disciples are ready with gratitude for the enriching experience they've had to be able to offer the balm of Christ's renewing grace to others. This is a path to fulfilling significance for us too, and through us for others. Amen.